Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Llewellyn's Complete Book of North American Folk Magic, a landscape of magic, mystery, and tradition. Edited by Corey Thomas Hutchison. Narrated by Elizabeth Wiley. Disclaimer. This book is presented solely for educational and entertainment purposes. The author and publisher are not offering it as medical advice. For diagnosis or treatment of any medical condition, listeners are advised to consult or seek the services of a competent medical professional. While best efforts have been used in preparing this book, the author and publisher make no representations or warranties of any kind. Neither the author nor the publisher shall be held liable or responsible to any person or entity with respect to any loss or damages caused or alleged to have been caused directly or indirectly by the information contained herein. Every situation is different, and the advice and strategies contained herein may not be suitable for your situation. In the following, you will find recommendations for the use of certain herbs, essential oils, and ritual items. If you are allergic to any of these items, please refrain from use. Each body reacts differently to herbs, essential oils, and other items, so results may vary from person to person. Essential oils are potent. Use care when handling them. Always dilute essential oils before placing them on your skin, and make sure to do a patch test on your skin before use. Perform your own research before using an essential oil. Some herbal remedies can react with prescription or over-the-counter medications in adverse ways. Please do not ingest any herbs if you aren't sure you have identified them correctly. If you are on medication or have health issues, please do not ingest any herbs without first consulting a qualified practitioner. Introduction. If you were to set out walking across North America, you might pass through every landscape with wide-eyed wonder and potentially never see another person, so unfathomably huge is the territory you'd travel. Yet it is the people in connection with the place that can offer you a totally new kind of wonder. What many people fail to realize about North America is that it is very, very enchanted. Picture a land stretching 5,000 miles across, bound by two of the world's great oceans. Within that space, nearly 25 million square miles, you find frozen tundra and enormous glaciers, albeit ones that are receding now more rapidly than we'd like. You encounter scrub pine forests, deciduous rainforests, blooming deserts, vast prairies, and towering redwood groves full of trees so mighty and ancient, they make you believe in the power and presence of giants. Some of the world's oldest mountains roll through one side of the landmass, while newer and more dramatic peaks stretch over the tops of thunderstorms on the other. And the people, millions and millions of them, a land that has housed hundreds of indigenous nations for millennia until invaders from lands across the sea violently eradicated and displaced them. The children and grandchildren of those invaders have now exploded to even greater numbers, contending with their dark legacy while also trying to forge a bright future of their own in the vast, richly diverse landscape. And one hopes working to forge that future in more cooperation than their ancestors were. The robust continent of North America is a fusion of space, landscape, and inhabitants. We have here a biodiversity to rival or surpass many continents, with a wild proliferation of flora and fauna that can shock someone who has never seen a creature like a moose, or delight them as they see prairie dogs popping from burrows in curious bursts of fur. The people here are both cosmopolitan and uniquely individual, representing the fusion of dozens or more lineages in any given family, while also asserting a sense of purpose and destiny. The magic of this continent resides in the people, informed and shaped by the landscapes they inhabit and the forces of history that have guided them. For some, the magic is in the wonder of those prairies, mountains, and forests, and rightly so, as they are fundamentally bewitching on their own. But there are other kinds of magic here, derived from the people's way of living in this land. They carry traditions from elsewhere into new nooks and crannies, where old stories about weather-predicting bears become transformed into celebrity groundhogs or an ancient fairy race unmoored from its home in the hills of Ireland must suddenly slip into the old stones of Appalachia to hide. The revels of Chinatown during the New Year's Lunar Festival are different than those one might find in the towns around Beijing. But they speak to those traditions and the way they have been transformed here. These transformations, the ways that the traditions of distant lands are reshaped in North America by the people who dwell here, are at the heart of what we call folk magic. What exactly do we mean when we say that term, then? As a professional folklorist, I could certainly offer some academic-sounding explanations using terms like vernacular belief structures and performative behavior. But while I appreciate the scholarly side of things, I also recognize that when we talk about folk magic, it's something that comes from the heart and the gut as much as the head. And so I'd prefer to use that language here instead. Folk magic is the way that ordinary people shape the world with the uncanny, otherworldly, or wild power they have access to. Mostly that power comes from an interaction between the landscape and the person doing the magic. And there are plenty of people who don't envision folk magic as magic at all. A Baptist woman praying down the blood of Jesus to protect her favorite department store layaway clerk would be horrified by the idea she was doing magic, for example. And if this example feels oddly specific, it's because I speak from direct experience here. Yet her act of invoking protection through divine or supernatural means is not particularly different than an African-American man putting down a line of salt or brick dust powder around a home to protect it from harm, or a Jewish-American person installing a mezuzah on a doorway to provide blessings and keep the household safe. They are all what we might anthropologically call apotropaic charms, ones designed to ward away evil. And each practitioner might not call what they do magic, but for an outsider looking in, they would seem very much the same. Folk magic is the magic of the people. So who are those people? We often think of the folk in a sort of sepia-colored way, a nostalgic image of rural salt-of-the-earth types using old-fashioned ways. In truth, the folk are you and me and everyone around us. Everyone belongs to folk groups of some kind, families, religious communities, classrooms, or military companies. All of them have unique folk bonds as well as rituals and traditions that connect them. And in most cases, these folk groups have magic that they tap into in times of crisis, need, or want. To tell the story of folk magic in North America, then, we must meet the folk. In order to understand the folk and their magic, well, you need to hear about it from them directly. And so this book provides a map of sorts. It will take you to a number of stops from coast to coast through Canada, the United States, and Mexico. Most importantly, at each stop, you will get to sit down with the people who practice the magic and hear about it from them. The contributors in this book all have experience doing the magic they discuss as a member of their folk communities, and in most cases, teaching and sharing their magic with others as well. As you pull up to each new spot on the map and knock on a new proverbial front door in this book, I ask that you listen to what the contributors have to say. Absorb what they tell you about their folk magic, even if it's not folk magic you yourself might do, and listen to the stories and spells they weave. What is folk magic? Of course, listening to all the folk magicians in the world won't help you if you don't know what they're talking about. The words folk and magic seem familiar to most who have heard them, and we may have a vague sense of what they mean when joined together, but it might help a bit to clarify what the authors and contributors in this book mean when we say folk magic. For one thing, it has to be derived from the folk. Already we've talked about who those folk are and why it is so important to make sure we are turning to people within folk communities to understand and listen to what they say about themselves. But what about the magic bit? There are a lot of definitions that float around out there regarding magic, ranging from a century-old chestnut attributed to Aleister Crowley, stating that it is change in accordance with will, to paraphrase. That essentially means a person's guiding purpose or intention can be used to coax change in the world. And it's a pretty good definition. From a more academic perspective, magic is often thought of as rituals, objects, performances, beliefs, and behaviors that influence the natural world in supernatural ways. Again, to paraphrase, people do magic all the time, even if they don't call it that. Someone avoiding walking under a ladder is following a superstition to avoid bad luck, changing their potential future. Another person sharing a dream they had with a friend and asking, "What does it mean?" is participating in a very old tradition of divinatory magic, attempting to glean messages from the great beyond, or at least their subconscious. Hanging horseshoes in the home, carrying a rabbit's foot, or even making a wish on a shooting star all have magical connotations. Even people who consider magic to be something sinister and dangerous might be surprised at how much of it they do in their daily life from an anthropological point of view, from making the sign of the cross when they are frightened and need protection, to writing down prayers in the hopes that they will come true, a form of petition-writing magic. We often think about magic as coming in essentially two flavors. The first is a ceremonial form favored by people practicing from old books of magic called grimoires, or using highly involved rituals to effect complex changes in themselves or the world around them. They often wind up working with foreign languages, following detailed instructions on inscribing figures and sigils onto particular materials, and doing their magic in precise ways at particular times to make it work. And it is very effective for them. This is sometimes referred to as high magic, because of its emphasis on elevated spiritual states and the requirement for a kind of education and a depth of knowledge from practitioners. The second is built upon the back of what everyday people do and believe. They inherit their rituals from family or community members, and often use very simple, easy-to-get ingredients. The purpose of the rituals they do is to alleviate some immediate need, an illness, a financial or legal problem, or finding love, money, sex, work, as soon as possible. It is urgent magic, driven by necessity and shaped by culture, and while it can be enhanced by working at particular times, it really comes down to doing what is needed to get a result right now. This is folk magic, which is also sometimes called low magic, although virtually no practitioner I've met ever thinks of it as a lesser magic than the ceremonial kind. Both magical forms are valid, and they are not strictly exclusive. Folk magic often incorporates seals from grimoires or abides by astrological rules that would be very familiar to ceremonial magicians. But there is something about folk magic, its rootedness in place and people and need, that makes it appealing and effective in unique ways. Folk magicians may go by a wide variety of names, too. Witches, conjurers, cunning folk, hoodoos, traiteurs, curanderos, hechiceras, root workers, brauchers, sorcerers, fairy doctors, and more. In some cases, their communities see their work as necessary, vital, and worthy of support and praise. More often, the communities around folk magicians tend to be more circumspect. They may recognize the value of the magic they do, but keep a wary distance, because anyone who can use magic to help can use magic to hurt, too. In some cases, folk magicians can be seen as a menace, and they may even experience great persecution because of their talents and abilities. In this book, you'll meet folk magicians from a wide variety of backgrounds. Some are open about their practices with the communities around them, and some tend to keep their power carefully hidden from prying eyes, only revealing their connection to the world of the unseen to those they trust. What you will find, though, is that all of them love both the magic they do and the communities whence that magic comes. They see the whole tree, with roots in their home culture or cultures, a sturdy trunk of practice and knowledge, and branches spreading out among the folk they live with and love to share magic with them all. A brief but important note. Throughout this book, you will be hearing from folk practitioners dealing with a variety of cultural practices that may not be supported by medical science or which could cause you other sorts of problems, such as legal entanglements. The contributors of this book make no warranties as to the effectiveness of any of the material presented here. And nothing in this book should be taken as medical or legal advice. Please consult a licensed medical professional for all medical issues and consult with professionals in other fields as needed. This book is expressly about folklore and folk belief, and thus the material presented here is to be understood within its cultural context and as part of that system of folk belief only. The journey, where this book takes you. There are a lot of stereotypes about how witches travel on flying broomsticks, or even the backs of soaring goats, in kind of a Halloweenish Santa Claus way. But really, one of the great metaphors for living in North America is the road trip. We set off on a journey with a destination in mind, but the ways we travel and the things we see or encounter along the way wind up being far more the point of the trip. In some ways, the hit TV show Supernatural seems a more accurate representation of the traveling folk magician, as the main characters get around in their 1967 Chevy Impala. And so we shall head out into the field, as we folklorists call it, on a trip to learn all we can about the fascinating topic of North American folk magic. If you were to hit the open road in search of folk magic, you'd likely find you need only head down the block to bump into some kind of everyday sorcery. That, however, would only give you a small sliver of the much larger magical picture you can find here. So instead, as you go through this book, I will be traveling with you as we visit more than 24 different folk magicians throughout the reaches of North America. You'll get to sit down with each of them and hear them talk about their particular branch of folk magic, including its history and contemporary practice, and then learn a bit about how they got involved with that path in the first place. They'll talk about what it takes to become a part of the practice, including whether or not the practice is considered closed to those without proper initiatory or cultural backgrounds, and offer some first steps to learning more. There will even be practical experiments along the way that you can try out to see what interests you. You will probably notice that while several of these folk practitioners discuss their Native American ancestry or family connections, and a few pieces of the lore in the book do touch on indigenous information, such as historical tribal lands and legends, we have not focused on the native experience of folk magic here. Why? In the simplest terms, this is just not the right book for that topic. Native American cultures and practices comprise over 200 distinct nations in North America alone. Trying to shoehorn 2 or 3 indigenous writers to speak on their folk magical practices is reductive and will only serve to exoticize people who already experience that sort of othering in so many places. Ideally, someday there will be a book, or hundreds of books, written by indigenous authors about their spiritual and folkloristic worlds and ways. But that is not what this book can do, especially not under the editorship of a white person who does not belong to any of those communities. This book will offer you a lot of folk magic to think about, though, and a lot of places to dig deeper, find out more, and better understand the folk ways of the magic users of North America. Throughout the book, I'll share some field notes about relevant subjects of interest or traditions from the region we are visiting. I include an expansion at the end of each section called Traveling On, which offers additional key sites or points of interest and magical terms you might want to know. I'll also pause to offer my own reflections as we move between these different areas and try to provide context, commentary, and companionship along the way. The experience of folk magic is one of movement, journeying, and encounter. Meeting the people who are the folk behind each practice is absolutely vital to understanding the magic. I'm honored that you've chosen to come along with me, and I hope that I will be a good guide along the way. I promise you'll meet astounding people, learn something new, and end up seeing a much more enchanted place than you did before, even if you only look out your front door. Happy travels, bon voyage, and buen viaje as we begin our journey. Chapter 1. New England and the Maritimes. The Witch's Bridal, an introduction to the folk magic of New England and the Maritimes. Where do you start a journey that involves witchcraft? And how do you travel? How will you get from point A to point B, or in the case of the crooked, twisting path of witchery, likely point A to point Q by way of point XYZ? I had thought very seriously about doing this book as a regional folk magic guide that didn't follow a particular path, or that went from West Coast to East Coast as a way of unsettling and breaking the westward expansion mindset that seems embedded in the colonialist story we get told about the United States. It's also worth noting that starting at the eastern shoreline and working west winds up ignoring the fact that there were literal nations of people already living in all those spaces. In the New England area alone, the Iroquois Confederacy had enormous influence over a number of tribes in the region. I have three reasons, however, that I decided to start our journey into North American folk magic here in the northeastern part of the landmass. Firstly, our journey will take us along in the direction of the sun and the moon on their travels through our skies. Since celestial objects, these two in particular, have such a rich connection to folk magic in these lands, it seemed reasonable to take their lead, and to use the extra hours of daylight we get from going that way to cover more ground, so to speak. Secondly, I was able to start us not at Plymouth, but in places like Montreal and Newfoundland, Acadie and Quebec City, breaking the mindset that American folk magic is purely U.S. folk magic. You will see very clearly that is not the case in this book. The first people I get to introduce you to, in fact, are a pair of French-Canadian sorcières who will take you into a land deeply haunted by tricky devils, flying canoes, white beasts, and magical traditions that go back four or more centuries in this place. They will tell of fae and revenants, two types of magical creatures, as well as show you the haunted marionettes, the dancing northern lights that can be beautiful, but also a bit scary in magical estimations. Thirdly, I love New England. One of my favorite places to visit is Boston, for example, because it is both historically engaging, the Freedom Trail, intellectually innovative, MIT and Harvard, and stuffed full of people from so many walks of life, amazing Irish pubs, and also some of the best Italian antipasti I've ever eaten in North Boston. As you will see in Morgan Daimler's excellent section on the Irish-American folk magic traditions we find in this part of the country, and further abroad in places like Chicago. Additionally, it's full of folklore, and that folklore is full of witchcraft and magic. We often associate areas in and around New England with some of our best-known witch stories. Salem is here, of course, a place that has captured our imaginations, for better or worse, since 1692. Another favorite tale of mine is that of Maine witch Betty Booker, who rode a skinflint boat skipper all over the state after turning him into a human horse with a magic witch's bridle when he treated her poorly. There are stories of witch sheep in Rhode Island, along with dozens of witch stories in places like Connecticut and New Hampshire. Plus, the long history with life on the sea in this part of the continent has always involved folk magic as well. This is part of the grand tour of...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?